Track 16. Our resident historian Chris Armstrong tells the story of Frederick Marriott, who, after a career in the Navy, retired to Langham.
That Norfolk is the prime choice for a peaceful retirement for many from other parts of the country is nothing new. As long ago as 1843, naval hero and novelist Frederick Marriott came to live in Langham near the North Norfolk coast. He had a somewhat unusual childhood. He was the son of Joseph Marriott, variously described as a banker, a maritime insurer, he became the chairman of Lloyd's, and a businessman, but who made his initial fortune as a plantation owner. Joseph was not only a slave owner, but an unrepentant one. Even after his return to England from Grenada in 1791, the year before Frederick's birth, he remained staunchly in favour of continuing the slave trade and, having become an MP, fought bitterly against the abolitionist movement. Indeed, when he died more than 30 years after his return to England, he was still the owner of several hundred slaves, whom he left to two of his other sons. Frederick was one of 15 children born to Joseph and his American wife, and one of 8 who survived to adulthood. He seems to have been a relentless child, more than once running away from a school he hated to attempt to go to sea. Eventually his father got the message, and at the age of 14, Frederick became a volunteer and later midshipman aboard HMS Imperius, under the command of one of the most colourful commanders in British naval history, Lord Cochrane. Cochrane's courage, disregard for convention, and imaginative daring were to prove the inspiration, so some believe, for such fictional characters as C.S. Forrester's Hornblower and Patrick O'Brien's Jack Aubrey. Cochrane had always been intended for the Navy. He was listed as a crew member of a naval ship at the age of 5. This illegal act was one to which a blind eye was frequently turned for influential families and was intended to help in accelerating later promotion on the grounds of length of service. Cochrane's career was to have its ups and downs. He suffered court-martials and reprimands, but his series of victories kept him in demand. At times, when he was in disgrace with the Royal Navy, he served with those of Brazil, Chile, and Peru. But wherever Cochrane was, so was action, and daring action. As an inspiration to write of the sea, Marriott could not have had a better model. Despite playing a major role in numerous actions under Cochrane's command, Marriott was not totally typical of the naval officer class. He had a rough induction to the Navy and was bullied as a midshipman, not least because of a lisp, with which he spoke throughout his life. He survived and flourished without losing a sense of decency. He was an outspoken critic of impressment as a means of recruiting, and an enthusiastic flogger. He was both intelligent and thoughtful. In 1817, he developed a means of signalling between merchant ships, which was widely adopted and was still in use 40 years later. His intelligence was matched by his personal courage. On 2, possibly 3 occasions, he dived overboard to rescue crew members who had fallen into the sea. He was awarded a gold medal by the Royal Humane Society, not just for this, but especially for his design of a new type of lifeboat. His own leadership and tactical qualities were well understood, especially after his service in Burma, where, as senior naval officer in Rangoon, he became heavily involved with the army in the First Anglo-Burmese War, and where he converted a local boat to become the first steam-powered warship. His service there earned him a CB. Further honour followed. On the proposal of Charles Babbage, a mathematician widely accepted today as the inventor of the computer, whose friendship had been one of the few pleasures of his school days, he became a Fellow of the Royal Society. Despite all his qualities, he was not universally popular with the Admiralty. His views, on which he published, both on the use of press gangs and the prevalence of flogging, were not to the liking of officialdom. In the light of that unpopularity and indifferent health, he had twice been sent home to recover from malaria and also suffered from an underlying lung condition. He had an astonishingly successful career, eventually making post-captain in 1825. But his progress came in fits and starts as health and attitudinal issues came and went. As his career progressed, Marriott became increasingly interested in the idea of writing. Long periods at sea presented the opportunity. And write Marriott did. He was a contemporary of Charles Dickens, who on the introduction of my favourite marine artist, Clarkson Stanfield, became a friend, and along with Dickens and Jane Austen, his work was held in high regard. Like Austen, he was initially published anonymously, but his anonymity was relatively brief. Various officers recognised incidents in his stories and, in some cases, caricatures of themselves. It is a little sad that the work of Austen and Dickens should be appreciated so much today, while Marriott seems barely remembered. Perhaps television rights are part of the reason. Only a later one of Marriott's novels, Children of the New Forest, has been televised, and that was nearly 50 years ago. It is 90 years since Carol Reed's acclaimed film of his novel, Mr. Midshipman Easy. Wake up, TV moguls! There's an awful lot of meat in his perhaps partly autobiographical early works. In 1824, Marriott was a fortunate beneficiary of two substantial estates, that of his father and of his uncle Samuel. The combined value of these estates was about £38 million in today's money. Along with his siblings, he became extremely wealthy, although he appears not to have been very good at managing his money. Although married and with a family, he became something of a socialite. He was popular in London, combining with his wealth the glamour of his heroic service, an exceptional and fertile brain, the wit of a young Wilde and the bonhomie of a 19th century Bertie Wooster. He was an attractive character and moved in the highest social, even royal circles. Amongst his friends was the Duke of Sussex, a literary royal who gave him a lease of Sussex House as a home. He purchased a further property in Brighton. On one convivial evening in 1830, he agreed with a casual acquaintance to exchange his superb London property for 1,000 acres of farmland near Langham, and the property which the other had built on the land. Fortunately, when he visited, he liked it, although he didn't finally move there for a further 13 years. His wife Catherine didn't share his enthusiasm, and they separated after 24 years of marriage and 11 children, of whom 8 survived to adulthood. In the interim, they had both lived in London and in Belgium and Switzerland. Each of them had significant numbers of English residents, generally with insufficient wealth to maintain the lifestyle they would have enjoyed had they remained in London. It was in this period, too, that he travelled to the United States and Canada. With an American mother, he might have expected a warm welcome in the US. Sometimes it turned out to be hot rather than warm, especially when he spoke approvingly of an English captain, Andrew Drew, who had led a force to cut out an American steamer supporting French-Canadian rebels, set it alight, and let it drift over Niagara Falls. One effigy of Marriott was burned publicly, and another publicly hanged. It says much for his wit and articulate manner that he left the US more popular than when he had arrived. One of his reasons for visiting had been to try to stop the practice of American publishers reprinting his books without consent or payment. Another was to reach a conclusion about the future of his marriage. He was more successful in the second aim than the first, though it was to be some time before the final separation. In 1843, he moved to Langham, becoming both a magistrate and a deputy lieutenant. He seems to have enjoyed the life of a country gentleman, attending shooting parties and being part of the country set. There was perhaps the occasional twinge of nostalgia for his more rackety London life, especially when members of his more bohemian past, while happy to see him in London, failed to make the journey to Norfolk to visit him. As he grew older, his writing focused less on his naval background and more on stories for children. Some of his came to live with him in Norfolk. His sons, however, followed him into the Navy, the elder dying shortly before Marriott himself in 1847. Already unwell, this further sadness possibly hastened his decline, and he died the following year. Ironically, Marriott received one further honour, the French Legion of Honour in 1833. He had spent his early career fighting Napoleon and was the officer charged with bringing news of the late Emperor's death back from St. Helena to London, accompanied by a sketch he had made of the corpse. Since a few years later he helped to thwart French ambitions in Canada, the award may be one that the French later regretted. So many awards and such a full life were the measure of the man. He had a formidable intellect, an occasionally short fuse, an abundance of courage, an ability to write entertainingly, and the good sense to settle in Norfolk.